It's just told me it's recording. Hi, everyone. My name is Becky and I am an alcoholic. Thank you, Jan, for asking me to come and share and also for hosting the meeting. And well done, Meta. I've seen you in the last few months on different meetings, so that's really good, exciting stuff. Hopefully nobody was at Raynham last Saturday because this is going to be quite a similar show to the one I did there. I think what sometimes happens is I seem to do a lot of shares in about this time of the year and then none the rest of the year. I think if people see you, me on one group and go, oh, can you come share on ours? So all the secular meetings I kind of just do in a rash. It's quite odd. So I'm told it's kind of like 20 minutes ish, if that's all right. If I go on too long, shout. But what I just do a quite brief history of where how I've got here now, just because it's useful for other stuff that I will talk about. I thought I was quite a happy child, but my brother thinks I wasn't quite as happy as I thought I was. And then I went to boarding school when I was 11 until I was 18. And while I enjoyed bits of it, I don't think that's a terribly good place for people who already might be struggling with expressing emotions, and don't like who've got low self-confidence. Because it's not the kind of place where if you've got lots of self-confidence and you're in a place where people's opinions kind of matter because you're all in a little community, then it's fine. But if you're low self-confidence, then you just keep your head down and you know, so as not to be ashamed or embarrassed of making a tit of yourself. After that, so towards the end of that, I started overeating because I was lonely and I was isolated, and I isolated myself more in order to eat. So I would sit in my dorm. By the end of boarding school, we had our own dorms and rooms, and I would just lie there and eat and read books. And I still do that now, still all these years later. And I spent the next 20 odd years really struggling with eating too much. And I would go on a ridiculous diet, lose loads of weight, and then do the same again lots of different times, and more weight went on. And so in 2013, it's a bit like sick and tired of being sick and tired, except eating. And I just went, fuck it, I cannot be bothered to go on yet another diet. So I had a gastric bypass, which is a radical thing, but after 20 years, and I haven't worried about my weight since, but not dealing with the underlying issues of why I was overeating. All lots of forums said loads of people who have gastric bypasses then develop alcoholism, and I was like, yeah, whatever. And here we are. I started struggling properly with alcoholism just as we went into COVID. I qualified as a doctor quite late on, so in 2015 I qualified, and therefore we were treating COVID patients, and I had to be isolated in the first weekish. 2 weeks of March. And it's not fun. Being told to stay off work normally would be fun, but I live by myself in a one bedroom flat, and you know, you were told to go out just to get milk or whatever, and that was it. And it was, I just went, well, what am I going to do with myself for a week and a half? So I just got shitted. And I can't remember any of that week. That was the slide. And by the end of July, I'd spent 5 weeks just not going into work, and I'm a locum doctor, so I just volunteer to do shifts. I don't actually have to go in unless I choose to. And I stopped, and I just lay in my pajamas, not washing, with bin bags full of empties until for about 5 weeks. I didn't even bother telling them I wasn't coming in. I felt awful, but and then I eventually asked for help from my brother. On a Tuesday evening, I think they came around here. And by Thursday morning, I was in rehab for the first time. I went for a month, and did all right till Christmas. And then I relapsed because yet another holiday from COVID had been cancelled. So I had nothing to do. And everybody else had plans because it was all cancelled at the last minute. So I couldn't really kind of piggyback on into anything else. It was all a bit late. So I relapsed. only for a couple of weeks, and then I stayed dry again for about 4 months, and then I relapsed again and spent the rest of the year. I was still working, and my work wasn't affected by it, so I was kind of taking having a maybe two, occasionally 3 pints on the evenings where I was working the next day, and then the days I wasn't, I would have more, but not so much that, it was unmanageable or anything. But then the following Christmas, it's always Christmas, I properly went mental because there were no work shifts again, and I ended up in hospital for a month on ITU in a coma for 2 weeks. And I very nearly died, and I came out with an absolutely, because they had to, I had a ruptured gastric ulcer, and they had to open up my whole abdomen to clear it all out. And then the stitches burst because it was so septic. And I emerged with, I'd still a hole in my abdomen. I've still got a scar that's literally from my bottom of my rib cage to the whole way down my abdomen. 10 weeks later, I relapsed again in Florence. I remember going to see the David in Florence one day, and then the next day I was like, oh, this is great. And then in the evening, I just at 9:20 in the evening went, right, I'm going to have a drink. And that was 3 days gone. I don't remember 3 days. And then I was caught by my friends on this holiday. I was with them on this holiday, but we'd had a weekend where they were doing something else and I was doing this. And it was awful. And I went, but I, and then I went back home, and my brother said, you have to go back into rehab. And I'm like, oh. But I did go back, and I went for a week, and then I ended up staying for 3 months. and I kept extending by a week and a week and a week and a week. And it was the best 3 months really ever, because not just I learned so much about myself, and I met lots of lovely people, and I learned a lot from therapists, from other people. I learned about a lot about how hopefully to keep sober, because I've been sober since then. And I'm so full of admiration for people that can stay sober that haven't gone to rehab, just doing it with AA or even without AA. I would never have been able to do that. I would be dead by now probably. Just that concentrated, this is how you are, these are all the things that we think, just all the every we did 12 hours a day, and it was quite hard work, but it was brilliant. So what I thought, and that was 2 years ago. I got my 2 year sobriety last month. And that kind of birthday thing makes you, me, reflect on stuff. So I just thought there are some things on my mind anyway, but I just thought I'd share some stuff that I've been thinking about. And again, I think there were a couple of Jan, I think you might have been on Raynham last Saturday. So sorry, this is kind of not new. But there is a difference between hearing somebody say something, and actually understanding what it means for me in my mind. So, things like understanding gratitude. We had to do gratitudes in rehab, and for ages I just was like, yeah, this is a nice coffee, or it's a nice sunshine. But actually, feeling grateful is a totally different thing. And I probably will come back to that. Understanding when people say this emotion's temporary, you don't have to act on it, which is the equivalent of this too shall pass. That took a really long time to go, yeah, it will actually. For my first 19 or 20 months of sobriety, I was pretty miserable. And I think that's true of a lot of people. I've never had a pink cloud, anything like that. My baseline was slightly miserable. It wasn't totally miserable most of the time. Sometimes I was. And I would maybe see some friends for a couple of hours and then come back home and be back to this kind of slightly miserable baseline. I got quite pissed off eventually. But it did go. And I had a kind of meltdown. What I did after I left rehab was they offered this thing where you could pay for kind of week's worth of rehab, and you would then come back every month or so, every 4 or 6 weeks, for 2 days and a night to keep on track and to be reminded of how you're progressing and just to make sure everything was okay. So I did that. My last one of those was December last year. And that was just fantastically helpful, because it's quite frightening leaving rehab, especially after 3 whole months of being in there. And even though it's just up the road, my second rehab, I chose one in London. This first one was up near Manchester. I was coming in, going back in there every month or so. Plus, I was weekly seeing one of my therapists, whom I still see now, and he's one of the therapists from the rehab. I've forgotten how I started that sentence. It seems a really long sentence. I've forgotten how it started, but yeah. So, oh yeah, this too shall pass. So I learned there was a lot of stuff that I had to deal with. Like, I didn't go out of my way. A lot of people in my rehab went out and just went straight back to these really chaotic lifestyles, or invited chaos into their lives by shagging each other, or by immediately going on internet dating sites or doing whatever. And I sat there, I don't, anyway, I don't really like a chaotic life, but I certainly don't want that, because I'm quite well aware that life is difficult enough and things will turn up I'm going to have to deal with without me inviting that chaos in. And I was very frightened of emotions still when I left rehab. So it's like I said, I remember saying in the face-to-face Islington meeting in London, that I feel quite emotionally frail and I just want to take things easy. I didn't rush back to work. I was very gentle with doing stuff. I didn't go traveling again till this year, well, till much later anyway. Because I was worried, we had did such a lot of stuff about relapse triggers and prelapse and things in rehab that I spent a lot of time being quite frightened that. Because my impression of my relapses was that I was fine, 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 pissed. And I didn't want that to happen again. And my drinking dreams still, when I have them occasionally, are I'm kind of all right. And then suddenly I'm drunk and I don't quite know how I've got from one to the other. And I don't think in real life that would happen anymore. But still, that is a fear. What I did, another thing is kind of they do say be kind to yourself. And that again took a really long time to understand what people were saying. And I did quite a lot of stuff with my therapist about ne negative automatic thoughts and how I would get from maybe having some thought to beating myself about something and going, you're a dick. And I didn't really understand where that thought process had started. And he was trying to get me to identify the steps so that I would not at the end of that go, you're a dick. I would go, no. That's just the way I happen to have reacted at this time. I may not like it, but it doesn't make me an awful person. It just means that that's a particular reaction. And it may well be something that I've learned as a coping mechanism, or it might be that I'm not in a very good place right at this minute. And therefore, my reactions to things are a bit more extreme than they might otherwise be. We did stuff about emotional bank accounts. And if your emotional bank account is low, if my emotional bank is if it's kind of full, I've got time for other people, I've got time for myself, I might feel chilled. If, as happened a lot in rehab, but also in life, it happens that I'm feeling a bit miserable or I've had a long, emotionally difficult day, then I'm going to be less able to listen to other people sympathetically or myself, and I personally, I'm much more likely to say lose my temper with a door or a piece of furniture or anything in my flat, particularly a piece of technology when it doesn't work, because separately I'm quite stressed and that's the way it manifests with me. I'll just suddenly lose my rag with something, an inanimate object. And that's why self-care is really important. Just taking a bit of time to go, okay, this is how it, not you're being a dick, let's take a time out. It's something's happened. I just need a bit of a break to think about it because this is not the way I want to act in the world and I don't want to behave like this. I'd like to be a kind person and a nice one who's nice to be around. And for whatever reason, that's not how I am at the moment. And I still sometimes struggle with that. But I'm much better. The thought will flit across my head, you're a wanker. And then I'm much better at going, no, I'm not necessarily. I'm not behaving in a way I don't like. And there's a thing about talking to an inner child. So we did a bit of work with my therapist about identifying when I was most vulnerable, which is probably about when I went to boarding school age 11. I was so homesick. So talking to that little girl and going, it's all right, look, this is the way it is, but just kind of calm down. So and that's important because kind of an epiphany earlier this year was that I have had in my head, I think I thought, well, my alcoholism's quite recent, so therefore the things I've got to fix are recent as well. But in fact, this is literally a lifetime, almost literally a lifetime of behaving in certain ways and dealing with situations to just get through them. And that is not gonna happen quick. It's not gonna happen quickly that I unpick those and that I unlearn those. There's stuff before I went to boarding school, there's stuff after, and therefore, sitting there going, well, why isn't it all working? Or why am I still doing this? It's really unhelpful because, sorry, there's a fly and it's really annoying. Because that's not going to happen quickly. And I just, it goes against all my kind of instincts to be patient. But that's just the way it is. I'm not coming to my time. Being curious about myself, sometimes that's still a bit grudging, but it was nothing like as when I first went into rehab, they would say, aren't you curious to find out about yourself? No, not at all. It will be awful and I won't be able to cope. And no thanks. There's nothing interesting to find out. It's probably awful. I'll find out I'm even worse than I am, or I've done even worse things, and I just don't want to know. Thank you. Whereas now, I will not do that. And I actually really enjoy going to therapy and talking about myself and doing things like this, where I get to talk about myself for 20 minutes, 25 minutes to a captive audience who can't interrupt. It's great. Oh, yeah, welcoming feelings. That's kind of linked. A lot of this is to do with feelings. I'm only on step eight. I'm on step eight, not only. I'm on step eight. And which feeds obviously back to step four, or step four feeds into step eight. But a lot of my fears in step four, but most of my step four, sorry, was fear. The harms was kind of, well, that's awful. But I haven't done specific stuff. It's more pissing people off over a lengthy period of time than, an individual incident of pinching stuff, for example. But my step four, there was a lot of fears around, mostly around fear of other people's opinions and fear of having an emotion that I'm not going to be able to deal with. time and dealing with feelings are not relapsing. These incremental, just things that I go through, then it might be tiny little things like, a crap day at work where normally I would have come back home via the off license. Now I had a crap day at work. I shared, there was a particular day about 3 or 4 weeks ago where I came on to group, shared about it, cried in two separate meetings. And that, as I said at the time, it is much healthier than what I thought was a healthy thing to do, which was go, well, that's just part of the job, really. And why am I complaining when all these horrible things are happening to these people? Actually crying about stuff and sitting with these emotions and being sad when sad stuff happens. The particular thing I was crying about was that I was at the coffee shop talking to a lady with a little boy, and it turned out he'd just had his second birthday, 2 months after being diagnosed with a stage four brain tumor. And I just thought it was the most, it made me, I didn't cry then, but on the way home and then the next day, it just made me cry. And I just thought it was really sad. But I'd much rather be that person that cries about things that are sad like that than not. I don't want to be the kind of person or the kind of doctor who goes, yeah, well, this is just the way it is. Well, I will. The other thing that I just learned this year, and that's sorry, I'm going to run out of time shortly, but At one stage, I went to my therapist about 4 or 5 months ago and said, I just get the impression that I'm a bit of a dick. And that my sober self is now going to be a bit of a dick. And I don't quite know what I'm going to do about that. And he said, do you not think it's more likely that this now, after all these decades, is the person that you're supposed to be than that you're emerging? Your true self is emerging and you're just not comfortable with it because you don't recognize it's unfamiliar. And that's been really comforting, actually. Sorry, there's quite a lot of stuff on here. I just want to pick because I'm about to run out of time. Working out what makes me happy. Most things now. It doesn't take much to be find something to be grateful for. What I have before I went to rehab, and I remember thinking this and saying it to my friend right before I relapsed this last time. Hopefully, this last time. I've got all these things going for me, and I'm still miserable. I own my own flat. I'm a doctor, so I've got a decent job. I've got lots of lovely friends. I've got a family that who loves me, and I was still miserable. Now, I'm like, look at all these things I've got. And I can look at one of them and go, well, yeah, look, I've got that. I've got a lovely, my flat's full of plants that make me happy. And then from that, I'm like, and my flat's colourful and it's got things in that I love and I own my own flat. And then I work up from that. And then just, it really doesn't take much for me to get myself out of a vicious cycle and into a virtuous one, which before it took absolutely nothing. I couldn't see how to get out of the vicious cycle, first of all, but, once I was, and then it just took nothing, very little to get me back into it. And I didn't really understand that. It was all a bit nebulous. And I was going, well, I seem to be miserable. I don't really know why. And I feel quite ungrateful for it. Yeah. So I, let's finish on that. I said this, sorry, at Raynham again, but we did a thing in rehab called, it's called kintsugi pottery. And what happens is you break the piece of pottery and then you glue it back together again with gold paint. And the idea is that the finished piece of pottery that's broken and been remended is more beautiful despite its flaws or because of its flaws. The flaws are what make it beautiful. And the idea is that people, their flaws are what make them beautiful. And I just think that's a really lovely idea. So I will finish on that lovely Japanese image of the pottery. Thank you for asking me.